It is the general practice of all saintly people to deliver the fallen. Therefore, they go to people's houses, although they have no personal business there. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. A sannyasi is supposed to beg from door to door. He does not beg simply because he is hungry. His real purpose is to enlighten the occupant of every house by preaching Krishna consciousness. A sannyasi does not abandon his superior position and become a beggar just for the sake of begging. Similarly, a person in householder life may be very important, but he may also voluntarily take to the mendicant way of life. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were ministers, but they voluntarily accepted the mendicant's life in order to humbly preach Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, message. It is said about them,
Tvaktva turnama shesha mandala patim shrenim sadatu chavat bhutva dina ganesha ka karunaya kaupena kana shita.
Although the Goswamis were very aristocratic, on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they became mendicants just to deliver the fallen souls. One should also consider that those who engage in the missionary activities of the Krishna consciousness movement are under the guidance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are not actually beggars. Their real business is to deliver fallen souls. Therefore, they may go from door to door just to introduce a book about Krishna consciousness, so that people can become enlightened by reading. Formerly, brahmacharis and sannyasis used to beg from door to door. At the present moment, especially in the Western countries, a person may be handed over to the police if he begs from door to door. In Western countries, begging is considered criminal. Members of the Krishna consciousness movement have no business begging. Instead, they work very hard to introduce some literatures about Krishna consciousness so that people can read them and be benefited. But if one gives some contribution to a Krishna conscious man, he never refuses it.
Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadam Palati Swapadanta Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Nustute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpataru Vyasya Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Just going to repeat the translation. Text 39, Chapter 8, Madhya Leela, talks between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. It is the general practice of all saintly people to deliver the fallen. Therefore, they go to people's houses, although they have no personal business there. So we're still in the beginning, part of the meeting and the conversation with Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. And Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya have just, they're in the midst or towards the end of really embracing each other and entering each other's hearts with great love and joy. And Ramananda Roy is actually glorifying Lord Chaitanya. He's glorifying him, saying, I'm a Shudra, and still you have embraced me, you've accepted me in your heart. So he's full of joy, he's glorifying him. And this is part of the glorification. It is the general practice of all saintly people to deliver the fallen. Therefore they go to people's houses, although they have no personal business there. He's glorifying Lord Chaitanya, saying that, you know, you're saintly, you're so saintly. He hasn't yet realized really fully who Lord Chaitanya is, not consciously anyway. That's yet to come. But that he's so saintly, he doesn't care what our condition is. He doesn't care who we are. He doesn't care where we've come from. There's no rules or regulations to getting Lord Chaitanya's protection and love. He has no personal business, but yet, you know, he will embrace us. So Srila Prabhupada in this purport, even though we are not Lord Chaitanya, and we're very far from being Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada's helping us to understand in this purport, what can our mood be? Srila Prabhupada's created a movement, a community. What's a movement? A community, right? A community that doesn't just move together, but moves the world. That's a movement. So Srila Prabhupada's created a movement that is so steeped in this, let's deliver. Let's deliver. What are we delivering? Who are we delivering? We are going to whoever we can with whatever we do. It's not just speaking. It's not just giving class. Even our cooking has preaching in it, doesn't it? Everybody who cooks, everybody who's come across Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, when you cook, you don't think about just I'm feeding Krishna. Thinking, oh, how can I cook so that those who eat this, their hearts are filled with love for Krishna? How can I distribute laddus or cookies so people's hearts are filled with love for Krishna? Anybody who is painting the building or doing deity worship, yes, of course, we serve Radha Krishna. Like, our hearts are full of much, much, much love, awe, reverence, joy. But also, in such a way, Srila Prabhupada says, dress the deities in such a way that everybody's eager to come and see them. Yes, sometimes in India, we find deities are not so well looked after. But Prabhupada made sure that in every temple, even if the worship is simple, the deities are dressed with much attention. Because when others come to see, when we don't have yet so much attraction or attachment for Krishna, the externals matter. Right? Foods must be palatable, deities must look beautiful, although Krishna's already beautiful and prasadam's already tasty. So this preaching mood is all there. And Srila Prabhupada's explaining that. What are we delivering? We are delivering Krishna's friends, Krishna's love, Krishna's family, our family, back to him. You know, if we think about delivery people, we've all had delivery people. Whether you live at the temple or not, someone's delivered a package, right? What is it that drives a delivery person? What is it that motivates a delivery person, other than their paycheck at the end of the day? Have you noticed some delivery people? I've met some, I talk to them, I talk to everybody. And they tell me they will specifically pick certain areas where they will deliver. Because when they deliver to those people, they get extra special mercy. They say they get extra gifts, the people are kinder, the people are nicer. So by coming to Krishna consciousness, we become Krishna's and Guru's delivery people, right? We become delivery boys and girls. Right? We have packages to deliver, people's hearts, our own hearts. And Prabhupada's explaining that we have to have this mood of a mendicant, this begging mood. That's what a delivery person has, you know, especially a spiritual delivery person, saintly delivery person. We don't just work for UPS or, you know, Hermes. You know, we work for Krishna, we work for Guru. We have no personal business. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining that one should also consider that those who engage in these missionary activities of the Krishna consciousness movement are under the guidance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there's this special mercy that we have when we are going to people everywhere, whether they're in our personal lives, whether they're in our professional lives, whether they're coming to the temple. We are begging. What are we begging for? What is the mood of a saintly mendicant? Prabhupada has explained there's no personal business. It's not that a mendicant is looking for some gain, personal gain. whether it's rotis or money or fame or position. What are we begging for? This mood of begging, it's there throughout our scriptures that we must learn to beg. Krishna begs us in the Bhagavad Gita. He begs us, always think of me and never forget me. Because he's always thinking of us and he never forgets us. So when we are begging, whatever service we're doing, but particularly when we're trying to be delivery boys and girls, we are begging Krishna, please engage me in your service. Please accept me. And we are begging those we go to, please always think of Krishna and never forget him. Isn't that the mood we carry in our hearts? And when we carry, this is intelligent compassion. Right? When we're sharing Krishna consciousness, really, unless we are intelligently compassionate, unless we're thinking, okay, unless we're really feeling I have something of value, that I really, 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 I've heard this wonderful person Krishna, who loves all of us so much, who loves you so much. You just turn to look at him, read about him, hear about him, call his name. We say that with compassion. We give that with compassion, with intelligent compassion. Understanding where is this person at? What can they accept? Please, we're begging. When we beg, what do we need to be able to beg? What is it that pushes us to beg? Think of a time we've all begged. We do it all the time. We're all beggars. We do it all the time. Always begging for something. Where do we have to be able to beg? That's not a rhetorical question. I'm waiting for some like dialogue here. What space do you have to be in your heart to beg? Humble, what does that mean? What does that feel like to feel humble? So feeling not qualified, that I have space, I have emptiness, I have nothing. How else does it feel to beg? Need. Yes, there's a need. There's a need. It's not just a want, it's a need, right? When we want something, we get greedy. And greed is important in Krishna consciousness, right? We want to be greedy for the mercy. But need makes us beg. When we need something, we don't care. We don't care what we were before. Okay, we don't care. Pride is out of the window. This is humility. We beg. We beg from our heart. It doesn't matter if we're physically kneeling down or not. If any of us have ever begged Krishna for anything, or anyone for anything, you know, that need is, it's like a hankering that it feels compulsive. It's from every single core of yourself. Every cell, every thought, every feeling, every intention goes into begging. So this begging, you know, Srila Prabhupada gives us the example of the six Goswamis. I'm just looking at the time. The six Goswamis are friends. And actually what he quotes in this purport is the fourth verse of the Shri Sad Goswami Astakam, written by Srinivasacharya. I want to just share the translation of the first four verses, because we are all begging. We're always begging. But in this verse, when Ramananda Roy says that with no desire for personal gain, what does this mean? Because we are always begging. Depending on our level of advancement, we may or may not be, to varying degrees, begging for Krishna's mercy, begging for Lord Chaitanya's mercy. We may be begging for so many things. Right? And it's understandable. You know, I have to drop the mind thing into the session. You look at the mind. It's vast. It's huge. We use 10% of a hard drive that we've been carrying for millions and millions of lifetimes. You know, in Bhagavatam, explains how the mind is so subtle and so huge. Our subtle body is so huge. It reaches not just every corner of this material universe, but every corner of material creation. We're carrying a lot. We are carrying a lot. We've seen a lot. Many, many false egos we've had. Many senses of who we are. Many types of personality. Okay? So those of us who are really like, oh no, I'm an introvert. No, I'm an extrovert. I have to say, well, actually, no, we've been introverts before. We've been extroverts before. That's all, it's all there. It's all accessible. If we're willing to, you know, engage all of it. in Krishna's service. So there's all these different ideas we carry of ourselves, and have carried of ourselves, and they seep into our conscious day-to-day life from time to time. This is part of our purification. Krishna shakes us up. There's an earthquake, right? Chanting japa shakes up the mind. Right? Many of us have probably found since we started chanting, we're more disturbed by what's in our mind than we were when we were in ignorance. We were peacefully, happily ignorant. It was fine. And then we started chanting and great. In the beginning it was great. And then, I have stuff. Where did that stuff come from? Didn't even know I had that. Never even thought about that before I started chanting. So we have a lot of things. And so these things come up and we beg. We beg for relief from suffering. We beg to have our desires fulfilled. We beg to be engaged in serving Krishna, but for many reasons other than actually serving Krishna. So the propensity to beg is there. So the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, you know, they are Goswamis. They are masters of their senses. Okay, a controlled mind is a controller of the senses, right? And a controlled mind is controlled by the intelligence. And of course, who's all of that controlled by? By us, the real us, the soul. So the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada gives them as an example because, you know, we read their literatures, we read about their lives, from the point that they took to the mendicant's life externally, right? But actually they were begging long before they took to a mendicant's life. And especially if you look at Raghunath Das Goswami, who was the first to encounter Lord Chaitanya and meet him after he took sannyas, and Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, what they came from was far from a mendicant's life. What they came from was more than what most of us have. Okay, you look at Raghunath Das Goswami, he was the sole heir to multi-million fortune. Sole heir. He was the only child in the family. But he was from a family of Vaishnavas. He was from a family of devotees who were playing the game. And Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami also, they had high position. They were ministers, right? They had everything material. Fame, wealth, respect, power, influence. But for all three of them, actually all the six Goswamis, their hearts were completely locked into hankering for Lord Chaitanya's association and serving others to bring them close to him, bring them close to Krishna. So I'm just going to read this translation. How did they do it? How did they live in this world in a non-mendicant way? Okay, with opulence. With what mood? What did they do next? How did they live so that their minds could become their friends? Because actually, if you look at the mind, you know, we talk about the mind being the enemy or the friend, right? But there's a transition place. When the mind's the enemy, right? The mind, the untrained mind is an enemy. It's always trying to keep us here. And then the trained mind is a friend, becomes a window to the soul. Right? This is why the mind can reach every corner of the material universe, but can't go into the spiritual world. For that, we need to be who we actually are. So that's why even Ruchi, Ashakti, still, the mind is used. This is when the mind is very much our friend. But Bhav and Prem, we have to pierce that barrier between the material dimension and the spiritual. That's why the mind can be a window to the soul and a window to the spiritual world. But we truly serve from the core of our hearts. So how did they do this? There's a bridge. There's that transition where the mind becomes a student. The mind has to become a student. And in the student stage, when the mind is being trained, it becomes a bridge, the two-way bridge. Outward looking, false ego, outside world. False ego can also be dovetailed in Krishna's service. And inward looking, the window to the soul, to the spiritual dimension. So how did they do it? So I'm just going to read the translation for the first four or five verses. Because, you know, it's their associates through whom we actually learn to understand how is it that we become masters of our minds. So translation for the first verse is, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. They are just like the ocean of love of God, and they are popular both with the gentle and the ruffians, because they are not envious of anyone. Whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone, and they are fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Thus, they are engaged in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls in the material universe. The attachment the Goswamis had to Lord Chaitanya, even in separation, Lord Chaitanya kept them away, actually specifically to Raghunath Das Goswami and Sanatan and Rupa Goswami. He said, play the game. He said, stay in your positions, play the game. Okay? The thing is, when we play the game, we also don't want to get lost in the game. We don't want to lose the game either. That can happen. Sometimes we play the game and we get so lost in the game, we forget which side we're playing for. All right? So be careful because, you know, our activities are becoming more diverse. We're reaching many more different types of people. We're going into more and more dangerous fields, right? We're going to more and more dangerous homes. So Prabhupada's saying, you know, in this purport, how in the West, begging is you get handed over to the police. So we don't externally beg, but actually we go into people's homes. What is someone's home? Someone's home is where they feel most comfortable, isn't it? Sometimes someone's home is actually in their home. Sometimes their home is work. Sometimes people find safety in digital media. So we're everywhere now. Okay? We're everywhere. We're taking Krishna everywhere. But because the more dangerous the environment becomes, the more we have to be careful that when we play the game, that we remember which side we're on and we don't lose. So what are some of the qualities that we need? So they're always engaged in chanting the holy name and dancing. They're popular both with the gentle and the ruffians because they're not envious of anyone. This is the mood, the heart of a beggar, not being envious, being gentle with everyone. We don't have to bash everyone with Shastra. We don't have to make them feel small, but we recognize the environment that we're in. And sometimes playing the game in your different environments will require you to behave in different ways. Even within the temple, you have different roles, right? Sometimes you're doing a service where the more gentle side of you can manifest. It's fine. And that might fit your nature. Other times, there are other services you're doing, you might have to be more forthright and direct. And other services you do, you just have to follow instructions. You can't really use your intelligence or your decision-making. You just have to do what you're told. Right? So this gentleness, popular because we're gentle with everybody, including the ruffians, because we're not envious. Whatever they do, they're all pleasing to everybody. Think about it. If we're begging someone with intelligent compassion, begging in our heart, who we're always begging, we're actually begging Krishna. Isn't that pleasing? That mood, somebody's begging out of love. Thus, they engage in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls in the material universe. Second verse, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Again, Srila Prabhupada has given us one of their, you know, tricks of their master plan, expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures. Prabhupada says this repeatedly throughout his purports. We must scrutinizingly study this vast mind that gives us other desires that we beg for. Yeah, are the things that we beg for, either avoidance of or desire for. They're very quickly squashed by chanting, by dancing, but by reading, by studying, by scrutinizingly studying. Srila Prabhupada is explaining in this purport that when we listen to Lord Chaitanya, when we take up his mission, we get his direct protection. I remember one time Janani Vas Prabhu came over and did a program, and somebody asked him, can you please tell us pastimes of Lord Chaitanya? So humble. You know, Janani Vas Prabhu and Pankajanga Prabhu always give like really transcendental answers. And he responded in a way that was really surprising. We thought, yeah, he's going to get to some real like deep, you know, Chaitanya katha. He said, oh, there's nothing to tell you. We're in Lord Chaitanya's Leela at the moment, like this. You're all in it. We're all in it because we're all sharing Krishna consciousness. That's it. That was the end of the pastime. But it was so telling, you know, it was so nourishing, because it's so real for him, a personality like him, that we are actually steeped in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes at the moment. We are actually directly under Lord Chaitanya's protection. And we're directly under the protection of the six Goswamis. Why? Because everything that Srila Prabhupada's given us is from that, you know, they scrutinizingly studied all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all of us. These scriptures are complex. They have high level philosophy, okay, which require a really extremely intelligent mind, which is well-versed in all the scriptures to understand it. But they wrote over 100 books between the six of them in actually a very short space of time, giving us all the tools that we need to be able to live in this world but not of this world, and also share Krishna consciousness in a way that's palatable and applicable to everyone. To everyone and anyone. That's why we can take this everywhere. We can take Krishna everywhere and anywhere. There's no obstacle. Okay, sometimes in our service, this vast mind. Okay, you won't be tricked by desires and avoidance and fear. Fine, I'll trick you by making you think that there are obstacles in this world to your service, that you need more money, that you need more fame, that you need more influence, that you need more facility, that you need more renunciation. You can become attached to renunciation as well. So they've given us all of these tools, especially Rupa Goswami and Sanatha Goswami. Especially Rupa Goswami really gets down into the trenches with us, right? In Nectar of Instruction, really gets down into the trenches, really brings himself to our level. What is it that we need to be successful? I'm conscious of time and I want your participation. So I'm actually not going to do the rest of the translations, because we've got so many things we can just draw on with this. I'd like to invite everybody to just take a few moments and reflect. You know, we all have an internal dialogue. What is an internal dialogue? When we're doing our japa, when we're reading, when we're engaging in our services, when we're at work, when we're with our families, when we're acting with that 10% of our conscious mind. In the background, what is there? There's the background music, right? The background music. Every movie has a background music. Okay, life is like a movie. We have a background music. What's that running commentary? What is that background music and running commentary that's distracting us? That is making us doubt. That is stopping us from going beyond accepting the philosophy just on an intellectual level, but being able to act on everything we hear. So may I please, if you don't mind, invite everybody, if you have notebooks, use notebooks. If you can retain it all in your mind, use your mind or your phones or whatever you want to use. Be very present, like think about now, not maybe 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Right now, pick anything in your Krishna consciousness, whether it's your chanting, whether it's your preaching, whether it's a life decision you've got to make, and something you're really trying to dedicate in the service of Guru and Krishna. What is that your running commentary keep bringing up for you? What is it? Where is it that your mind keeps going? That keeps saying, you need this to be able to take the next step. You really need this. You can't do the next step without this. You can't take your next step. It's not possible. You really need this. Krishna's mercy is not enough. That's what the mind tells us, right? Krishna's mercy is not enough. You need this other thing. This is doubt. This is the mind. Lies to us all the time. Liar, liar. I won't say the rest. What is that personal gain that we think we need? It may be even relief from something, but that's still a gain. It's a covered gain. How long have you had that running commentary? I'm not asking you to tell me, just make a note of that. How long have you been worried, concerned that if you don't have this, you won't be able to progress. You won't be able to serve better. You won't be able to chant better. I'm really asking you to identify an obstacle. Not praying for humility. These are good things to pray for. What is it? What is always coming up in your mind time and time again? That running commentary, the script, you know? A simple example of an internal dialogue is if we really genuinely have some background dialogue telling us that we're not worthy of anyone's love. This is not humility. It's the whole low self-esteem. The difference between low self-esteem and humility is low self-esteem makes us preoccupied with ourselves about how we don't have enough. And there's no power out there which can give us enough. Whereas humility reminds us that actually, although we're insignificant, we are backed up. And so it motivates us to move, to act. So how long has this, you know, running commentary been going, this particular one? So if we have a running commentary that I don't deserve to be loved, I'm not good enough, then we can hear that Krishna loves us unconditionally, that he always thinks of us and never forgets us. We can hear that for an hour a day, every day, twice a day. But the rest of the 22 hours, that background dialogue will drown the voice of Shastra out. Okay. So you've identified some part of your inner dialogue, and you've identified how long it's been going. What would it take for you to recognize Krishna's mercy? What would it take for you to recognize Krishna's mercy? What are you expecting to see as Krishna's mercy? You know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gives the 64 principles of community building. You know what one of them is? To expect Krishna's mercy. Not hope for it. Not pray for it. He says to expect Krishna's mercy. Do we expect Krishna's mercy? You know, you might think, wow, that's a bit arrogant. Am I a bit arrogant to expect Krishna's mercy? But this is not the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Chakra's mood when he's explaining this. Isn't that we expect it because we're so qualified? We expect it because Krishna's so loving. It's actually incessantly flowing from his heart all of the time. That's why we should expect it. But, according to Krishna's timetable, because it's mercy, because it's incessantly flowing, and we should expect it, we should also expect that it will be delivered to us in exactly the way and the timing that's the best timing and the best way. Again, Rupa Goswami, when he gets into the trenches with us with Nectar of Instruction, what is he gives us? These three qualities, right? Three qualities that we should develop, three attitudes, positive psychological attitudes. Enthusiasm, confidence, and patience in our spiritual life. Okay, so that's why I'm asking, are you expecting Krishna's mercy and how? What will it take for you to recognize that Krishna's sending his mercy? Because we have our idea. Okay, well, if Krishna does this, then that means he's kind. Oh, Krishna, just send me this, then I'll know you're out there. If you send me this, then I'll know you're reciprocating. If you send this to me, that means you want me to do this. If you don't send this to me, that means you don't want me to do it. But we devise these plans, right? And we devise a plan of, send me your mercy, but send it to me like this only. You know, and then I'll recognize it. If it comes any other way, no, Krishna doesn't want me to do this. Krishna's not really out there. So how is it? How are we expecting Krishna's mercy? You know, when you go home, if you've written this, or back to your rooms or home, wherever you're going, when you go to your home, have a look at this. And then tell your mind, liar, liar. Okay, liar, liar. Because Krishna's mercy is already coming. Expect it. Expect it. It's there. It's already there. And expect that it will come with perfect timing. Anybody who's been practicing for any significant period of time, you'll see the mercy comes. Always comes. Surprises you most of the time in the way it comes and the timing. But if we're patient, if we understand what Srila Prabhupada explains these three qualities as, you know, utsaha, enthusiasm, being fed by, you know, our chanting, this begging mood, hearing, reading. He explains it's not just chasing after a feeling, right? Utsaha, we think, I should always be excited. I often hear, actually, devotees who are born in Krishna consciousness saying, I'm waiting for that. you know, utsaha moment that devotees who are new to Krishna consciousness have, that, yeah, you know, this is so amazing. But I've had this since I was born. And like, when is that moment going to come? When is that moment? But Prabhupada says actually that it's not just chasing after a feeling. Utsaha is endeavoring with intelligence. Endeavoring with, it's more than a feeling. Endeavoring with intelligence. He explains that then having confidence that, you know, Krishna's got my back. Guru's got my back. They'll always come through. Everything rests on Krishna, like pearls on a thread. So Krishna over there, protection. Raksha. Krishna gives us his protection all the time. And then having patience. Patience that my endeavors to beg for service, my endeavors to beg to be accepted, my endeavors to continue to be a delivery boy or girl for Krishna. Will be reciprocated with, and all help is always being sent, but always at the perfect time. Then we can really be patient because the timing always feels perfect. So, I'll stop there before I get told off. Do we, Jagat Priya Mataji, do we have time for questions and some discussion? Because maybe, is it 9 o'clock? Oh, good, we can have lots of discussion. Oh, please, over to you then. So maybe some of you want to share some of your, anybody want to share? Yes, Prabhu. I don't think it's...
Yeah, is it, I guess.
Yes, now it's working.
In the times of expecting Krishna's mercy, you can expect only if you really surrender fully, if you feel, I give my best, I give all, and you expect. But if there is something in you which you're holding back, taking shelter of something else, your skills, other people, resources, whatever it is, then in deep in heart you feel you cannot expect Krishna's mercy. This is my case. I feel I cannot expect his mercy because I didn't do my best. And therefore, he may come in some way which I will not recognize, or this kind of this thought on that. Cannot expect, really, if you feel you didn't give your best.
That's your humility, and a devotee has contradictory feelings. This is
true. It's true.
Yeah, no, but I like what you're sharing in the sense that yes, that feeling's also there. That as we have this. So there's two sides to expecting Krishna's mercy. One is we expect Krishna's mercy because it's always coming. It is actually always coming. But you're right. We don't always fully receive it if we have obstacles. If we're not fully surrendered, right? But then there's also the mood that even when someone is fully surrendered, they don't feel deserving of that mercy. Right? But this is humility. With humility, there's hope as well. The Goswamis are like this. They have, we read their prayers, they describe this almost a contradictory position, contradictory state of heart, where they feel very fallen, very insignificant, like they're not trying hard enough. I mean, you look at what the Goswamis, if they weren't trying hard enough, what are the rest of us doing, right? They don't feel like they're trying hard enough. And yet they're hopeful because they understand that they can expect Krishna's mercy. They can, because it's always flowing incessantly. In fact, if you read the rest of the translation of the Shri Sad Goswami Astakam, in the first 4 or 5 verses, it describes their external activities, how hard they're working, how absorbed they are, how much austerity they do. You know, Raghunath Das Goswami, he would chant 22 and a half hours of the day. He took barely any rest. He would take discarded remnants as his prasad. He'd really transcended bodily and physical needs. So was there any reason there to feel you're not doing enough? You know, so these first 5 verses really dive deep into how much a Vaishnav can really serve and surrender and still feel like they're unqualified, feel like they should not expect this mercy. and not undeserving of it. But then you look at the last few verses, and the translation talks about how, and you read this about their lives, how they're completely absorbed in Krishna's loving service. They're constantly engaged in serving Radharani and serving Krishna and making arrangements for them in their mind, in their heart. So they're simultaneously doing two activities. I mean, you're living in two worlds at the same time. They're externally doing one thing, internally doing another thing. You know, so how can that person not expect Krishna's mercy? You know, Raghunath Das Goswami, he was so renounced. Actually, this whole idea of a bhajan kutir for somebody, you know, for Vaishnavas who decide to completely just absorb themselves, it comes because of Raghunath Das Goswami. Because he, there's two incidences when he's chanting near Radhakund. So one time he's chanting and two tigers come to drink from Shyamkund, I think. And Krishna comes to protect him. This is seen by Sanatana Rupa Goswami, you know. He comes to protect him. And, you know, don't stop. Be a bit more aware, you know. your chanting is making the Lord come and protect you. Another time he's chanting, and he's chanting in the heat. The sun is very high, it's very strong, and Radharani comes, and she comes with her cloth and shelters him. And she's seen to be sweating. Her transcendental body and transcendental sweat is seeping through her clothes. He's just okay, you must stop just being so renounced. Build a bhajan kutir. Let's build a little hut. So, you know, take care of some basic needs. So, yes, mixed feelings will be there. Mixed feelings will always
it's
be there.
Something then like you don't expect mercy, but and then even if you get, you may dismiss or ignore, but then the ability just to expect mercy and be in this mood, like Goswami's, is totally absorbed. That's actually mercy.
Yes.
That's actually mercy, to be able to be so Krishna conscious. Not expecting mercy, but be actually Krishna conscious in expectation. Is that mercy? Or, you understand?
No, I don't.
Like, you don't expect mercy. You don't expect. And then Krishna may show you, but because you don't expect, you may kind of dismiss and then feel not worthy or whatever. But then just ability to be so absorbed, expecting that mercy, depending fully, and be so Krishna conscious 24/7, that's actually mercy.
Yeah, that is the real mercy. This is why we were talking about how we expect. That's why part of the exercise is, what are you expecting the mercy to look like? Because we put so many ideas on mercy. I'll give you a simple example. Actually, this example comes up a lot. We see we're used to a certain level of bodily comfort. I have met innumerable devotees who, after a trip to Mayapur or Vrindavan, have told me how they really got the mercy because they got a nice room. Okay, or they got to stay in, they got to stay in someone's room who's very exalted, and they were very kind, and they let them stay in there. Oh, I really got the mercy. Everybody else had to sleep on the floor, and I got a really nice room. So it's a simple example, and I'm sure we've all experienced it, where, you know, we've had some physical relief or bodily comfort sent to us when it was really austere, and we thought, wow, Krishna's so kind. He's given me so much mercy. So yes, you're right. Real mercy of Krishna, the mercy that's always flowing, is that he's bringing us closer to him, right? Forcing us to be more absorbed. So sometimes that means sending us very, very challenging situations. And he challenged the Goswami. It's always very challenging for them to have to play the game. They didn't like it. You know, it's created a hankering, a greed in them. But Krishna does that for us. He puts us in situations where we're forced. We get to this point where there's a peak of greed. Okay, when that greed, that hankering, that begging, when that peaks, that's when Krishna just arranges in our lives. Okay, now you can be fully absorbed. Now, it doesn't matter where you are, who you're with, now you can be fully absorbed and you can be with me completely directly. So, yes, that is the real mercy. That's why we must be assessing, you know, our internal dialogue, that what lies is my mind telling me about how the mercy should come. Is that something like that?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. I mean, just connected to that as well, it's it makes you question what really is mercy and how is the mercy coming. And like, I can speak from my experience that Krishna's mercy is manifested through the devotees who were not warranted to give me guidance. You know, it was none of their business to be there in my life, but they've taken extra endeavors to help me in my devotional life. You know, we take it as mercy that there's people here who are working hard in their Krishna consciousness and are giving us that source of inspiration and motivation. It's Krishna's mercy that we're in this bubble where we can get this inspiration. And these individuals who are working collectively to inspire us in our spiritual lives. So it's like just another way to look at what the mercy is or how it kind of can come into our lives, because it's not like some magical, mystical thing that happens. Like I meditate on the steps I'm taking in my Krishna consciousness, and I see how really Krishna has used so many devotees in multivarious ways to come into my life and give me that nudge of advice or give me that chastisement or tell me what I need to hear in a particular moment in time. And that's really a manifestation of his mercy, because as you mentioned, it made me get closer to him. It made me, you know, deepen my affection for trying to establish that relationship. So I just wanted to share that in regards to that point. And then just when I was looking at this purport, in that last bit which you spoke about, I'll just read it again, where Prabhupada is mentioning that the devotees are not really begging. In Western countries, begging is considered criminal. Members of the Krishna consciousness movement have no business begging. Instead, they work very hard to introduce some literatures about Krishna consciousness. And so I was thinking maybe we could share on this. Is our begging coming from us? We're begging Krishna that we can effectively use various ways to get Krishna consciousness to other people. Is that where like our begging should lie on? Because that's what Prabhupada did. He worked so hard to get Krishna consciousness everywhere, and he was begging Krishna to give him the strength and the ability to be able to preach in the West successfully, even at such an old age. And there's this quote by Yamuna Devi, that Mother Yamuna, that came from her book, I think. And it says, "Sincerity always attracts Krishna. The attention always attracts the attention of Krishna. And if you pray with sincerity for something service related, Krishna will answer your prayers." So I just want to hear your thoughts on that. Is it begging for mercy to be able to effectively spread Krishna consciousness, or where should our begging lie?
So earlier, you know, even again referencing the Goswamis, this idea of playing the game, you know, when we are begging, yes, of course, we beg for so many things in the pursuit of trying to share Krishna consciousness with others. But the real begging, really the heart of a Vaishnav, that Vaishnav who is absorbed, who wants to be absorbed, is I'm begging you to please think of Krishna, never forget him. And with that mood, everything else comes. So this is, and we can't all jump there. This is the thing. We follow in the footsteps of the Goswamis. We're not trying to imitate them, right? But if we know what the ideal is, that actually our sharing, our preaching, whether it's to one person, whether it's to lots of people, whether it's simply handing a friend a book, okay, or speaking to your parents about it, it will really be most effective when my heart is beating that mood that I always think of Krishna and I never forget him. Because when we have that, that's all we want for anybody else. You know, when the Bhagavatam, it says that actually a moment's association with a pure devotee, is the only thing that can bring unflinching spontaneous attraction to Krishna. A moment in Sanskrit is lover. And Prabhupada explains that lover is actually 1/11th of a second. That's a short amount of time, okay? That the pure devotee whose heart is steeped in begging, Krishna, please accept me. Krishna, please absorb me so much. I'm always thinking of you and I'm never forgetting you, right? That's what one wants then for everybody else. So that's the ideal. That's where we want to go. So one of the reasons exercises like this scrutinizing our mind for the different ways in which it convinces us that we need facility for our preaching, is that, yes, we always need practical things. Prabhupada was practical. He wasn't just, oh, let's just, you know, pray to Krishna that everybody, you know, remembers him, never forgets him, and that's it. No, he looked at adhikara, he looked at qualification, he looked at advancement. He made it very practical for all of us to be engaged in such a way that actually our preaching activities purify us. Because he's put us in situations, Lord Chaitanya's put us in situations where the very areas where we are sharing are the very areas where we also need to get purified ourselves. Okay, so, but we have to become careful then ourselves because it's our own area of also purification. How much am I reliant on facility versus mercy? Because it was also Prabhupada, very practical Prabhupada, you know, who was an expert manager, who was expert guru, who was expert so many things, single-handedly taught the deity worship we have, taught by Srila Prabhupada. The cooking we have, taught by Srila Prabhupada. The cleaning stunts, everything, the way we dress, taught by Srila Prabhupada. It's also him who said he started this entire movement just with chanting. Just with chanting. He had nothing. Just by chanting. He sat under the bari and just chanted. So ultimately, actually, it was his begging. It was his begging that everything else manifested from. So yes, we do what we need to do to make arrangements. But ultimately, it's where our heart is. And when our hearts really act, and this is why faith is important, and faith goes hand in hand with removing doubts. Okay, and removing of doubts is a practical exercise. It's not sentimental, and it's not just mental speculation. To the degree that we are not able to act on our beliefs, to that degree we still doubt them.
Thank you so much, actually, for sharing that, because even with the exercise that you made us do on the introspection, it's important because I can speak for myself. I've always had that, holding back feeling where I feel like I'm not qualified to be getting any mercy. So let me just work on the preaching aspect, on the strategic things, because that's all I can do, you know? And it's important to even get us to kind of decode some of these misconceptions we put on ourselves, because it limits us a lot. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The mind tells you that your inferiority is more superior to Krishna. That's low self-esteem. My inferiority is so powerful, even Krishna can't trump it. Crazy. Yes, Mataji. Do we need to? Sorry, can you just wait for the mic so devotees can hear? Sachimata.
Actually, this verse, sorry to go back, you said it everything perfectly, and also many others, but just going back to the verse is actually encouraging me as well as enlightening me. Such a beautiful verse has been spoken. First of all, whether we are a neophyte, came in yesterday, or whether we are practicing Krishna consciousness for many, many years, really there has to be the mercy upon us, first of all, from Krishna. That's why we are all here, regardless of our, staying into Krishna consciousness, regardless of that. Doesn't matter we came in yesterday. Doesn't matter how long we are practicing. Has to be Krishna's mercy, first of all. That's why we are here. Now, secondly, is that in the verse, it actually says that no matter whatever we are doing, if we don't have any personal interest on it, it is actually we are doing it for pleasure of Krishna, doing it for others, without hankering for anything for myself, that is a mohanta swabhav. That is the great qualities we are developing. That is the verse is telling us, and that should really, encourage us, regardless wherever we are, will allow us to progress further. So that is really a wonderful verse, and which all of you have said many things. But the bottom line is, it's very encouraging, enlightening for us that this verse actually telling us that regardless of our position, I may think that I am just joining today, but we are doing it for the pleasure of others. So that if we have in our mind, then we will have no problem. Mm-hmm. We will develop all our mahanto qualities within us in due course. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to say a comment on what Ian probably said about sometimes we have this idea that it's this magical, mystical thing. And then you went on to say about, for example, like a day-to-day scenario where there's devotees helping us in so many ways. But I guess it's like what Krishna mentions through the Gita about seeing with the vision of knowledge that actually the devotees, that is the magical and mystical thing. And understanding what mercy is to then establish, okay, this is the magical, mystical thing I'm experiencing to get close to Krishna. My question, correct me if that was wrong. my question is, what is the topmost way to respond to mercy? What is the best, like, even an example from Srila Prabhupada, or even just in general for all living entities, how do we know, or what is the best way to respond to it?
What's the best way to respond to mercy?
Yeah. Like, so in such a way that you're grateful to Krishna, you're grateful to the devotee, and just like, what is the best way to respond to it? Every scenario.
So Prabhupada says in this purport that everybody who takes up the missionary activities that Lord Chaitanya is saying, requesting of us, it comes directly under his protection. What's the one thing that Lord Chaitanya has asked us to do? One thing. How?
Chant the holy name.
So simple, we miss it. Simple. We devise so many different ways, different courses, different strategies to try and make this complicated version of Krishna consciousness simple, but it's already simple. This is what's the best way to respond to real mercy, as Prabhuji was, you know, saying, is when we actually start to become deeply Krishna conscious. That's when the mercy is really manifesting. That's when we're really accepting it. And that's actually what the pure devotees want. It doesn't matter who your guru is. The only thing guru actually wants for their disciple is that you become completely Krishna conscious. So the best way to reciprocate is, as Lord Chaitanya requested of us, just chant the holy name. Chant the holy name in a tolerant, you know, be tolerant in a humble state of mind. Okay? Thinking yourself lower than a blade of grass, be more tolerant than a tree. And in this mood, we can chant incessantly. Develop that. It takes development. It takes carving out. Yes, chanting carries its own life. It's Krishna. Krishna's name and him are non-different. So the holy names are alive. It's up to Krishna when he allows us to chant sincerely and purely. But we have to show our endeavor. We have to show some application. We have to try. No one's too advanced to chant, to not chant. No one's too advanced to not chant. In fact, the chanting increases. That's all we see throughout CC, throughout Bhagavatam, is when that moment comes where we're ready to surrender, what increases? The chanting and the hearing. You know what happened to Parikshit Maharaj? When that moment came when he was ready to surrender, what did he do? He just heard, didn't he? So this is what we're aiming for, complete absorption. And Lord Chaitanya has given us our prescription. Just chant. We chant sincerely with endeavor. So even you look at the three stages of chanting, Namaparad, Namapas, and Shudnam. Namaparad is when we're committing offenses. And the most common one, even if there's no philosophical doubts, is inattentive. The only difference between Namapas and Namaparad really is that there's a difference in the endeavor, that it's conscious, it's intentional, and intentionally trying to be attentive, okay, consistently endeavoring to be attentive. And then that's what attracts Krishna. That's what attracts more of Lord Chaitanya's protection. It pleases him so much because it requires humility for us to keep trying, right? If humility to keep trying comes from knowing that I'm not doing enough. It's not guilt. It's not toxic guilt that tells you you're not good enough and you're going to fail. It's a real genuine, okay, I'm going to keep applying myself here. Like I said, Prabhupada, all of this is born of his chanting. Really, all of it. All of this is born of his chanting. Prabhupada's chanting is in every brick, is in every atom and molecule. Okay? Prabhupada's chanting. That's where it came. That all of this was attracted by Srila Prabhupada's chanting. So what's the best way to reciprocate? Whether you're getting Krishna's mercy in the way you want it, or whether in the way that's ideal, apply yourself to chanting. Then that, when we apply ourselves, then when he's ready, we chant pure name. We have 5 more minutes. I can't believe I have more time than I thought. That's a first. Anybody else have any comments or questions? No? Okay. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.